Well, hello. Welcome to the Gooder Podcast. I'm your host, Diana Frike. As partner and CMO of Retail Voodoo, an award-winning branding agency, I have met with and worked with some of the most amazing women in the naturals industry, food, beverage, wellness, and fitness. As such, I decided to create the Gooder Podcast to interview these great subject matter experts and have them share their insights, expertise, and passions in a way that helps businesses all around the world become gooder. So today, we get to meet Jenna Arkin, Vice President of Ecos, or Earth Friendly Products, as many of you might know. Jenna uses her unique background in both chemistry and design to innovate safer, more effective formulation and compelling package design for the entire family of Ecos products. And we'll hear a little bit more about that in a bit. We're going to talk a little bit about the direction of green science, doormats, and how science and art are closely related, and maybe how saying yes can take you places you may have never imagined. So yay, Jenna, we finally did it. We're here today.
Awesome. I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh yeah. No, thank you. How's California?
It's good. It's really good. I think everyone's very excited and optimistic for a good summer. So we're just taking it all in swing.
Yeah. Right. I know. And, you guys have had your own unique history over this last month, this last month. I don't even know what I'm thinking. And it'll be fun to share about that. But, you know, before we get too far into learning more about you, let's give just a moment for you to give a shout out about your brand. Who is Ecos and why does the brand exist?
Yeah, I'd love to. So Ecos, you know, we're really passionate about creating products that are different than the rest of green brands you find out there. Mm-hmm. Our focus is really on authenticity and affordability, and that sets us apart. And the way that we do that is really by manufacturing all of our products in our facilities ourselves, which are carbon positive. So we really walk the walk and talk the talk. It's not just about what goes into our products, but the love and care that we go through in product development, which is my world, to bring them to life, and then also make them under our own roof and ensure the quality and really reduce a lot out of the middleman so that we can bring people safer products and non-toxic products that they can access at a price point that's not crazy.
Carbon positive, really quick, for those of us that might not know what that is.
Yeah. So there is, you know, we talk a lot about carbon and we talk a lot about not using a whole lot of carbon and then one day hopefully becoming carbon neutral. So, you know, whatever kind of carbon you use, you offset and make sure that you're not contributing to, you know, global warming. And then a step past that is carbon positive. So not only caring for the carbon that you use, but not offsetting it. And one level above that is actually putting carbon back. So that's where we are today, is we're the first carbon positive manufacturer of cleaning products. And that's something we're really proud of.
Now, I'm just curious. I listened to an NPR show a couple of months ago where I learned about actually how companies become carbon neutral. I mean, as in like at the global level. So is it the same process for global carbon positive, is that you are buying credits that exceed your carbon footprint? Is that what's going on?
That's exactly right. So the first step really for us is measuring. So understanding every single impact of how we do our business. And then what we can't make with our own solar and wind energy, then we purchase offsets. So we're above and beyond neutrality, which is why we are carbon positive.
Great. Okay. Awesome. Okay. Wonderful. Now, Kelly Vlachas, who I interviewed a few months ago, she's just a big fan of yours. And she's the one that she's like, if you interview anybody else on this planet, it's really got to be Jenna. So I just wanted to give a shout out to Kelly and go, really great fit. Thank you so much, Kelly. You've got some amazing people that work for you. And let's talk a little bit about now going back to Kelly and your relationship at Ecos. And you have an amazing path coming into Ecos. And then even within Ecos, can you share a little bit about why your education and your employment history kind of went the way it did and how you found your way to Ecos?
Yeah, I know it sounds really trite, but I think a theme for me, my career has just been to stay curious. And that path of saying yes and taking risks and jumping with both feet into something totally new has really served me well. I really attribute it to the fact that I think I get bored pretty quick and I really like a challenge and finding out what I don't know and figuring out how to fill those knowledge gaps and just go to the deep end of the pool and jump in and just figure it out along the way has really brought me here. So my background, as an undergraduate, I went to UC Berkeley. I was really excited about being pre-med. That was like my whole life. If from kindergarten, you're going to be a doctor, going to be a doctor. So I went and I was just feeling a little angsty about medicine and if it was for me. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to get into patient care and figure out if this is my path. So I trained to be an emergency medical technician. Decided it was not for me, but I really liked biochem. And so I finished out my major in science. And then right before graduation was like, you know what? I don't know what I'm going to do with my life, like the classic quarter century crisis, and thought I needed to do something creative. I've always been a really creative person. I like to make things, build things, tinker, and figure out how and why things work, which is actually what drew me to science, is that understanding of how and why things work. So, much to my mom's dismay, I did not go to medical school. I went to fashion design school. I got my graduate degree at Fidham in fashion design so that I could make things with my hands and try things and experiment and just bring in that creative fashion. So apparel was awesome. I love the fast-paced industry, but I got an opportunity to come work at Ecos and get back into science. And so it was really enticing. And I thought, okay, back into chemistry. I have a bit of imposter syndrome. Not sure that they wanted a fashion designer on the bench, but I just loved it. I loved it, and I just started tinkering right away when I got, in the field, and here I am building out a whole new department for innovation at Ecos.
And then, in with even within like you when you say you're building a whole department at Ecos, I mean, there's a bunch of hats that go with that, right? So what does that mean in your world or in Ecos's world? You're building out innovation. Is it the same as we might see some at another company, or is it different?
Well, I really went to Kelly, and it's so amazing to hear that she thought I would be great for this. She's such a role model to me and has been such a enabler to help me bring this vision to life. She's just a phenomenal leader to work for. But really for me, what innovation meant was keeping us on our toes and not resting on our laurels. And being in the green industry, you really can't just say we're done. This is a great line of green products, go out and sell it, because our technology is changing so rapidly. And to stay at the forefront and be true to our heritage as being a pioneer in the field, we have to push. We have to constantly push barriers and boundaries. And so for me, it's not just in the beaker, but I really try to bring a very interdisciplinary approach to innovation. So other departments probably love and hate that I will dabble and get over and say, hey, marketing, what about this? Or hey, sales, I try to be a resource, but also, an influence in pushing us forward with new business ideas, new business models.
And you did come in through the marketing design arm, or did you come in through a different way? I don't
I
remember.
came in through the white jacket nerd route. So I started as a QC chemist, which, not to say that's not a fantastic profession, it's not for me. So the hallmark of quality control, in my humble opinion, is that it should be really boring because nothing should be out of spec. So it's about logging those 10,000 hours and like taking a pH every single day and bacteria testing and just over and over and over again. But really, that laid a great foundational work for me to understand those nuances of formulas. And if something isn't right, what are the levers you have to pull to fix it? And that got my brain thinking, okay, well, how are these things built in the first place? And if I wanted to make it better, what would be the ways I could do that? And so, starting out in the chemistry segment and just being a QC chemist really got me the level of knowledge where I felt comfortable. I could start flexing the creative muscles on what we could do with the product portfolio.
So, when we talk about innovation and particularly in this cleaning phase and this kind of at the tail end of COVID, and we look back at the history of products in this space, there's like in the way back there were efficacy issues, right? It was it was new. We didn't have the technologies to kind of pull things apart the way that we have. And yet in the last few years, we're seeing a huge push in new brands coming out, new entrants. We have our classic entrants coming in with cleaner cleaning products. You know, has something happened with a technology that is increasing the efficacy of the product, or is it just more of an awareness and that it's working, or maybe a combination of both? What's your thinking around that?
So I think, you know, to be honest, the industry's come a really far way. And you're right, you know, 30 years ago, some of the green products, they weren't that efficacious. That is honestly an uphill battle we fight every day. Because if you tried a green product of another brand years back and you had a bad taste in your mouth, it's really hard to combat that. But, you know, we're really of the mindset that the technology is changing every single day. And so it is catching up to where it can be as effective as conventional. Mm-hmm. And it's always going to be this teeter-totter between really efficacious, but also really safe. And so something we try really hard to do is talk about what is clean, you know, what is real clean and at what cost, and making sure that cleaning your home isn't compromised on health and safety. You know, you can get a real clean without bringing in toxic cleaning products to your home. And so, you know, both the information and education part have really advanced. Consumers are so smart now, thank goodness, they're really looking at labels. But the other part is that the science is catching up, and the money and innovation on the raw material side is being put into green chemistry. There aren't huge investments being made in petrochemicals. Everyone wants to know that's great, but how can we do it with renewable materials that have last, you know, not the same negative lasting health and environmental effects.
I feel like maybe we're just at the beginning of this, you know, like there's got to be a green Drano in the future. You know, there's, you know, but I don't know how, of course, because that's not my area of expertise. And like, what's being talked about out in the nerd world, nether world, the green nether world, like how quickly is this evolving, and what does that look like for consumers in the next 3 to 5 years?
I think a big focus right now is on concentration. It's something we're certainly looking at. And then the types of actives and how you use them. So a lot of innovation is happening with enzymes right now. Enzymes are basically catalysts that make reactions happen faster. So instead of needing a whole lot of suds or a lot of kind of traditional surfactant or soap to do the heavy lifting for stain removal, you can use really smart enzymes that target exact types of stains and remove them. And then you're also seeing a lot of concentration. So consumers are starting to say, hey, I'm buying this big container. Could I buy less, since we know some of that's water? How much water can we take out? So we actually just launched a really cool product called Eco's Next, and it's an entirely liquidless laundry detergent. So just
I have
the
it in my home.
I'm so glad you hear
home. It. I bought some. I saw it and I was like, I gotta have this. Let's go.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the material science is really interesting right now, but also just how the products live in the world and the whole life cycle analysis of their water footprint, their carbon footprint. That's really the next wave of innovation we're seeing come through.
And then, so, I mean, we're seeing adoption, we're seeing greater adoption from the consumer too. Are we seeing it across all strata, or are we still seeing it with primarily like a certain socioeconomic group of people? Is it spreading?
Yeah, it's really spreading. We have this whole bucket of consumers we kind of call the interested conventional, someone that has traditionally always bought their grandma's favorite detergent, and now they want their own detergent that suits their family needs and their lifestyle and the things that they believe in. And so once we get those interested conventionals over into the natural category, we're really seeing growth. And so if you look at all the categories in household cleaning, whether that's laundry, auto dish, cleaners, really a lot of them are pretty flat after the COVID spike. Obviously people were cleaning like crazy, but what's really driving growth in a lot of these segments are the green brands. So we're seeing more consumers tip over into green and then stay in the green category.
Oh, really? Well, I was wondering, cause I may have seen conflicting information about how consumers, when COVID first hit, I had heard, and this may not be accurate, that at first everybody went with the hardcore kill everything petrochemical, and then went back the other way. Did it like rebound? And did it move massively into naturals then after that? Or are we still seeing the balance maybe be pre-COVID-y?
I think it's good. I think in general, people are understanding disinfectants and the need to really think about surfaces a lot more, you know, way more than a typical flu season, say. We actually did launch a green disinfectant this year that's powered by hydrogen peroxide. And so we, you know, we have an answer to that higher efficacy for just specifically killing viruses and bacteria.
Right.
But the other trend that's important is that people were spending more time at home. And when you spend more time at home, you think about things in terms of your safeguarding your home and creating a healthy home environment. And so people weren't wanting to use harsh chemicals they have to inhale all day. They were wanting to find things that are, you know, safer ways to protect their family. And then just hand washing, you know, you don't need an antibacterial hand soap to fight a virus, which is not a bacteria. Hand soap in general is a category that exploded, and we're still seeing a lot of growth there where people are looking for hand soaps that are both going to protect their hands, but also not chap and dry them, because we started washing our hands crazy. And a lot of these conventional hand soaps are really drying. So I think that is driving a lot of growth in the green as well.
Okay. Well, this is sort of a non sequitur, but I want to talk about this article that I read on Yahoo Money 2020, November 2020, and it was about the importance of keeping doormats clean during the pandemic. And I read it, and I got to tell you, at first I was like, this seems almost silly. I don't want to dismiss it or anything, but I got to tell you, the next thing I did was I was out there washing my doormat. I was like, how did that article come to be? And like, is it important to keep your doormats clean? I know that sounds like a kind of weird question in the middle of all of this.
No, you know, it's a funny approach. I totally like that you brought it up. But, you know, part of keeping your home clean is stopping germs where they start. And so the idea behind that article was like, okay, we're thinking about doorknobs. We're thinking about, you know, our doorbell, like all these different things that come into our house. But creating a healthy home environment is also about the physical removal of pathogens and dirt and just actually keeping things clean. And so if you imagine like a life without a doormat, you would get a lot of those, you know, dirt and things in your home. So keeping the doormat clean, make sure that the inside of the home is clean as well. So it was kind of a funny spin, but it's important, you know, and cleaning doesn't always have to be bleaching something. It certainly shouldn't be. That's not always the best approach to making something clean, but just rinsing, a good old healthy rinse and with some basic soap and water can do a lot of good.
Right. And that's what Kelly was reiterating on our time together, was everybody got really excited about disinfecting and killing and bleach. And she's like, if we just washed more frequently, like most of that stuff goes away with just a basic washing. And so I kind of liked the simplicity of just hose your mat down and you're already removing an X factor right there. So it was just such a, I like to do a little bit of reading on everybody that comes in. So I know who they are, make sure I ask relevant questions. And I just love that article.
I'm so glad.
Now tell us a little bit about eco-science. What is that?
Yeah. So when we kind of think about putting pen to paper and starting formulating, eco-science is kind of our approach to how we formulate. And it's very different. We really take a design to value approach. So we don't start with saying, what is the most expensive, you know, product we could put to market, or how much money could I get someone to pay me for this? We start with, what does the consumer need? What do you need out of a laundry detergent as a busy working mom? Or what do you need to wash 1,000 dishes and not have your hands dry out? We start with that need. And then the eco-science goes through and picks ingredients that are optimized for that purpose. Not, my lights are out because we have, you know, low energy buildings in here.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Occupational hazard.
Move a little bit more.
Yeah. So it's really about picking each material and optimizing it at the best cost possible, not over engineering something to where you might get on in the lab, like a microscopic improvement of stain removal, but like a real life stain removal that actually helps you, but doesn't break the bank. So that's our approach. And then we also have published a really comprehensive chemical exclusion list. It's called the Nasties. It just got published on our brand new website this April. Basically, you know, our thought is it's not enough for consumers just to have the right to know anymore. That's just throwing science. They also need the right to understand. And our job as scientists is to give perspective when we put things out to the world. And I think this year, more than ever, people have just really wanted science, but they need help translating science to contextualize it. So the NASCES takes a look at 500 chemicals that are commonly used across cleaning products and explains why they're nasty and why we'll never use them. And so giving consumers not only go by our products, but hey, here's a list of ingredients we will never use. If you don't want to use these, go out and start reading labels and make sure that you're making decisions that align with your values.
Yeah. Well, and what I love about that, because I think you're right, but you know, the democratization of information has also created a lot of confusion out there. And I think that sometimes even in the ingredients that you guys use, the way they are articulated in a scientific format might be confusing to a layperson who is not a scientist. And so I think providing those opportunities, and I don't know if this is how you do it, but you might go, instead of these chemicals, we use these chemicals or these compounds or these, et cetera. So then people can start to see that all science is science. There's good science and there's bad science, but science is science at the end of the day, and it's got its own vocabulary and it's got its own language. And I think it's really powerful to not just give them 30% of the information, but give them as much of the information as they can really comprehend so that they are making informed choices at the end of the day. Fantastic. I love that. Where would a person find that on your website? Is it
if you go to our webpage, egos.com, you'll see there's a whole section called Clean Chemistry. And our marketing team set aside with me and picked my brain, and we built this beautiful thing together that I'm so proud of. And it really dives deep into the chemistry. And, you know, I jokingly say, and I think it's even on there, it's not rocket science, it's soap science. Yeah. And I think people sometimes get really like afraid to dive in, but we try to break it down in a very digestible, approachable way and not take the highbrow, like you can't understand this, this is too technical, but hey, here's the science, come sit next to us. Let us walk you through this and explain how we did what we did.
Yes. Awesome. 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 Now, again, back when, you know, when we were talking about COVID-19, and I know that the first few months, I don't even remember how long those first few months were. Not confusion, but there was a lot going on within your organization, people keeping people safe, but then also making sure that the organization and the company was still manufacturing to meet demand. Tell us, did you learn anything from that time, either about the people that you work with or consumers or retailers, that you walk away from like just kind of going, wow, in a time of crisis, this was a surprising finding, whether personal or professional?
It was a crazy time, I think, for everybody. You know, I think for decades, we're going to look back at 2020 and think like how that those few months felt living in, you know, we'll tell our kids and our grandchildren, I'm sure, about it. For us here at Ecos, you know, we understood that we had a unique ability to help in a way that other companies couldn't. And so we kept the lights on, we kept running, we kept making hand soap, we kept making cleaners, we couldn't shut down, but we also had to make sure our workers were safe. And so round the clock, every department came together and we did whatever we could. You know, we found ways to get, you know, I personally sewed hundreds of masks for our workers so that we could protect them in the back and they could keep making soap. But we also, we got creative, you know, that was one thing that was so inspiring to me is our R&D department. We wanted to keep as few people on site as possible so that we could reduce the amount of transmissions. If it were an issue, we didn't know, you know, what would happen. So we moved R&D off site to literal kitchens and garages. And I am so proud of my team's resiliency. And I just felt scrappy and we got it done. You know, those first few Zoom calls, like people didn't understand how to use the, I mean, it was crazy. But I'll never forget like the experience of zooming into like my chemist's kitchen and watching them make something and guiding formulation, you know? So that was a funny moment. And I'm just proud that we kept the lights on and we kept going. And during that time also, we were wrapping up development on our green disinfectant I mentioned. And the time was now. We needed to get this done. And we got that product to market so quickly. And we just had to be nimble and keep moving. And we did. And it gave us purpose. And I'm just really proud of the last year for sure.
Yeah. And remind me now, are you back at 100% right now in regards to production, everybody's in the office, or what's that look like?
So production always stayed, you know, they were our on-site essential workers and they really worked around the clock and had crazy spikes in demand. In terms of our corporate office, we just came back to like a hybrid model. So where we're kind of 50-50, some employees are on-site, some employees are still remote, but now we've gotten so nimble and, you know, everything can work really seamlessly. So it's kind of a brave new world we're navigating and finding ways to make sure we're still connected and, you know, not missing a beat.
Yeah. I think it sounds like you guys are very much a test and learn kind of organization. Like it's, I think that's the conversations that I've been having with a lot of people is, you know, this and hearing them go, okay, well, this is what we're going to do now, as though it's written in a tablet somewhere and it's going to be like that forever. I think if COVID has taught us nothing else, it's that we have to be okay with like, this works today, tomorrow, something else might need to, might be a better solution. But it sounds like that's just kind of the nature of your organization as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, I always say pencils never down, beakers never empty, but you've got to iterate and prototype even business models or how we're going to work today or how work's continuing to change. It's not return to work, it's forward to work. And what does that even look like? So right. I think we have that innovation spirit in our organization and it's fun because we're nimble and we're also not afraid to take risk and admit when something doesn't work out and pivot and keep marching. So that's really the spirit around the halls.
Oh, awesome. So tell us now, we're going to do a really big pivot here and step away from work a little bit and get to know you a little bit more. I found something about you, about Derby dolls. And I had the luxury of poking around and learning about what that is, but why don't you tell everybody what Derby dolls is? Because again, this is not work related, but, tell us about your involvement with this magical family.
Oh, I love it. So years back when I lived in downtown Los Angeles, my husband, you know, was like, he's in law school and he wanted to go on a double date. And I was like, your law school friends. Okay, we'll go. And the date was to go watch roller derby at Derby Factory, which used to be in historic Filipino town, very near downtown Los Angeles. And I walked in and it was this crazy ragtag energy of awesome, strong women, athletic women who were moms and literally doctors, lawyers, and they live this totally awesome alter ego life where they just got on roller skates and played this very physical game and just became literal superheroes. And I said, I'm going to sign up the next day. And I did.
I put
roller skates on and broke a few collarbones. And
no.
Oh, yeah. It's so fun. But my pseudonym was Fira Knightley. And I had such a blast. Yes. And it's such a fun, empowering sport for women. And it really encourages, you know, camaraderie and women that can do it all and be it all. So it's such a positive force. And then actually, when I moved up to the state of Washington, to go work up in our factory up there, it was very much the Seattle freeze where I was this California girl, not able to make friends. And so I went and signed up for the local Derby League, Tilted Thunder. I skated up there for a while too. And then the Ole Rollers as well. So it's also just a great place to make friends and just, I love the energy, you know? So that was a super fun chapter. And I hope one day I'll get back on those skates.
Yeah. I would say that I have some friends who have kids that are in roller derby. And I would say it is very much, it's a family. At times it's a violent family. But it's a family nonetheless. And there is so much power and energy that comes from that. Even on the men's side too, I've watched men's roller derby as well. It's so awesome. And it just like, it's such an expression of who you are that like, if people haven't figured out who you are by just so far in this time that we've had together, like, I feel like roller derby is like, okay, that's the pinnacle expression of Miss Jenna. But I we're kind of, you know, coming up to the end of our time together, and there's always a handful of questions that I like to ask everybody. So this first one is, and you've already shared so much, but I always like to ask for what I call a happy hour fact, something that I would tell my friends over drinks, like, you would not believe that blank, blank, blank. Do you have a happy hour fact that you could share with us?
Happy hour facts. Oh man. There's so many. Three. Oh my gosh. Okay. So I think one of the things that would surprise people about green chemistry and green soap and just the idea of environmentalism is we kind of take for granted how new it is. So the EPA, for example, you know, it's only been around since 1970, which is the same year that Earth Day started. And actually almost the same year, it was 1971 that OSHA started, the Occupational Safety and Hazard, you know, agency. So the idea of health and safety and wellness, we really take it for granted, but it's only been around since 1970. So it really is new. And, you know, we've got some legacy now and our company has been around since the beginning of the EPA. And, you know, we really are pioneers in this space, but I think, you know, we often like to think that, you know, it's such a table stakes thing, but the fact that it's still growing and expanding is a tribute to the fact that people really didn't think about the dangers of chemicals in the 50s. We were just making plastic and we were making chemicals. We had no idea what the implications were. So the science is catching up, the knowledge is catching up, and also the attention to toxins is catching up. So that's something that might surprise people.
Wow. I think that's interesting. You ever hear of a show called Atom Ruins and the Everything?
No, I haven't.
No. Okay. I'll send you a link, but I just say this, and he has taken these certain bits and facts, like with FDA and things like the Environmental Protection Agency and everything, and gives a little bit of a backstory of how they come into play. And in a very, very funny, he's a Second City guy. If you like comedy at all, I'll send it to you. I have a feeling you really, really like the back episodes. They don't record anymore, but there's about five or six seasons. Yeah. And I think he does an episode on the Environmental Protection Agency, but it's anchored in product safety somewhere. I'll send it to you for sure.
Oh, that's really awesome.
Yeah, really great. Tell us, what other leaders or rising stars would you like to elevate or do you watch right now, and why?
So there's one lady that has become my long distance best friend for sure that I am so impressed continually by. So back in, 2019, before the world went haywire, we had the great opportunity to host the first ever Harvard Environmental Action Leadership Group. We flew to Harvard, got a bunch of students together and sat down and talked about environmental issues and brought together faculty and political leaders and try to see how could Harvard be more sustainable? What are the major issues? And having these great next thinkers of the world be at the table making decisions. And I happened to sit next to a woman named Shelley Zhu, who was just starting at Harvard Business School. And her whole idea was creating sustainable fashion in a way that had never been done. So actually we've kept in touch and she just graduated Harvard Business School and is starting Shelley Zhu Design. And forever, I hope we get to make this happen, but laundry detergent is used on fashion. And you know, that's my previous life. And so one day, hopefully there will be a Shelley Zhu times Ecos collaboration, but she's doing fantastic things with sustainable fashion. I mean, apparel is really ripe for disruption and it's so wasteful. Yes. I mean, fast fashion, if you go and buy something for $10 and use it once. So I love seeing what they're doing over at her firm. And I think we can expect great things out of her.
Oh, wow. That sounds great. Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. Tell me what brands or trends you are following right now. What do you have your eye on and why are you interested in them?
Well, you know, I have a strict rule for myself, one fiction to one nonfiction. I try to think about, you know, business and trends and future stuff a lot, but also just fun things and, you know, storytelling. And I really think that the brands that are most powerful are really thinking about the consumer as the protagonist and telling the story of their life. So I'm pretty diverse. I never miss any publishings from Fast Company. I love to see what they're up to and kind of what's the latest and greatest. And, you know, stealing and borrowing things from other industries, whether that be what's going on retail innovation or, you know, how are different industries like tech handling this crazy era of disruption. And I really think right now, when there's so much change, companies that are going to win, put the pedal to the metal and speed out of the curve. They're not afraid of disruptive times because in this void and gap, you can really start to solve problems consumers have in better ways. Yeah. And so trying to think about all the adjacent industries and the problems they're solving and how we could bring those learnings into our organization.
Okay. Great. And then the last question I have for you is, you know, if people want to connect with you, what's your preferred method? Are you a LinkedIn person?
You know, I should be more. I think I'm really behind on LinkedIn. I am on Instagram. I'm at
Okay.
Life According to Jenna. That's more of my family one, but also
Okay.
just through Ecos Cleans. I
Okay.
often collaborate and help on there for all the work stuff. So yeah, and you can check our website. There's an actual Ask Our Green Chemist, and which goes to me on
Oh,
our website.
really?
So if you really want to talk science, you can find me on our website as well.
Oh my gosh, I love it. Our ecos's very own Bill Nye. Like super not as quirky as him, but definitely breaking it down into the basics. I love that.
Oh man, I love Bill Nye as a kid. That's I was so excited and nerdy about science growing up. So thank you. That's a huge compliment.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, Jenna, I really want to thank you for your time today. I thank you for the work that you're doing for the consumers and out there, and then also for the planet. And I'm really glad that I was able to get you on today. And I hope that everybody will just, well, I just know that everybody's going to have loved listening to you.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity, and you stay safe and hoping for a really great summer and lots of sunshine and outdoors.
Fingers crossed, fingers crossed. All right.
All right.
All
thank
right.
you
Thanks,
so much.
Everybody. See you next time. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a creative marketing firm specializing in growing, fixing, and reinventing brands in the food, beverage, wellness, and fitness industries. If your naturals brand is in need of positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we're here to help. You can find more information at retail-voodoo.com. And so there you go. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this channel and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.